Well, let me give a big caveat first. I know that there are a lot of us in here who are looking at what suffering means, and you're looking for some help. And I want to let you know, if you and I were having a one-on-one discussion, I'm very confident I would say some different things, and I would say them in a different way. Today, I'm not really trying to personally counsel some of us through our difficult crisis. That would take different tact, different skills. Today, what I'm going to try to do is give a 30,000-foot view of how suffering and God may fit together, how we may approach it, some of the hidden advantages or aspects of it. And so if you're a little bit put off by something, just understand that I'm not trying to salve all of our wounds in here right now. I know some of us, when Chuck talked last week about how he and Maria were having a crisis with their pregnancy, and she was in the bathtub, and there was actually a supernatural piece of information that came to somebody else, and the baby lived and all was good. It was an amazing story, but some of us sat here and thought, you know, that sounds good for you, but what about me? I lost a child. That doesn't make me feel any better. Some of us have had yet another opinion today, and the prognosis is still not good. What about me? What about me that I've actually gone through a divorce? Divorce is actually much more painful than an actual death of the spouse. There's a severing. There's a ripping, according to studies. What about me? What about me? I live in Cincinnati, and the Bengal season, yet again, gave me pain and suffering. What about me? I got to lighten this up somehow. This is not all about a depressing day. I will go for little bits of humor whenever I can. We live in a very unique age in society. We live in a day and age where a 30-year-old executive can go to the internet using social media, using Facebook, and can topple an entire country. Never happened before in the history of human history. No one has ever toppled a country by going like this. He used Facebook. There was no guns. There was no violence. And a whole country has changed. Crazy, crazy times that we live in the midst of right now. And yet, in the midst of the amazing things that we do, we experience, the luxuries that we have, at the same time, there is the same old struggle that we face along with everybody in every corner of the world, in every time period, of every race, of every economic condition. It is the issue of suffering. It's the oldest problem of our race. In fact, the Bible's oldest book deals with it. The Bible's oldest book is the book of Job. I'll say it before I say Genesis. Genesis records the oldest stuff in the Bible, but actually scholars are very united that Job is actually the oldest written book in the Bible. And you may not understand the full story of Job, but you've heard things like she has the patience of Job. This all ties back to the core theme of suffering in the Bible's very first book that was written. And therefore, we're not unusual when we say, well, what about loving and loving God and suffering? We think that we're all interesting and like introspective. No, that is the oldest question you can possibly imagine. And human beings have always wrestled with it and always looked at it. Here's a basic synopsis of how Job starts. Job is an amazingly righteous man. He has a heart for God. He ends up doing the right thing over and over and over again. He's got a lot of money because he's built businesses. People think that he is an honorable person. He has a family that is really going on the right track. And two characters interact in the first chapter of Job. Those characters are God and Satan. Very strange them talk with one another. We're not sure, or people can debate whether or not this is a literal story that's giving literal truth, or if it's a figurative story that's giving literal truth. Nonetheless, we're queued up right away that there are two opposing forces that are against one another, and it's part of what happens in our world. And God says to Satan, hey, look at my man Job down there. Gosh, the guy has just got it going on. I love his heart. I love his integrity. I love everything about him. There's no one like him. And Satan says, oh, yeah, well, no duh. Of course he's honoring you. Of course his life is going well and he has a good time with you because everything in his life is great. I'll tell you what, God, you let me open up a can of whoop-ass on him and I'll see exactly how strong his faith is. And God says, all right, you can. Go ahead. I will allow you in the midst of some parameters to inflict some suffering on him. The only thing you can't do is you can't actually hurt him physically. And so Job is going about his business, having no idea what's been happening here. And all of a sudden, a messenger comes. Messenger is panting and says, the Sabaeans have come and they have taken your oxen. They've taken your servants. This whole part of your empire is gone. And before he's able to finish teasing out everything that's happened, another messenger comes from another part of the land and says, the fire of God fell from heaven, burned up the sheep. There was lightning came, burned up the sheep. All your sheep holdings, they're gone. Before he's able to finish telling him everything that took place there, another messenger comes up and says, the Chaldeans made a raid on all of your camels and your servants, whoever saw the camels, they're all gone. And before he's done giving a full explanation, another one comes up and says, your sons and daughters, they were eating wine in the oldest brother's house, and behold, a great wind, a hurricane came, and your kids, they're all dead. This, my friends, is a bad day. This is a bad, 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 bad day. And Job is grief-struck, and he's rocked. In verse 20, Job arose, tore his robe, shaved his head, fell on the ground, and he worshiped. And he said, naked I came from my mother's womb, and naked shall I return. The Lord gave, and the Lord has taken away. Blessed be the name of the Lord. And all this, Job did not sin or charge God with wrong. We sing a song around here that actually quotes this. You give and take away, blessed be the name of the Lord. Amazing thing that Job does. All this stuff happens. He's not immune to suffering. He doesn't deny it. He rips his clothes, shaves his head, drops down the ground. It says he actually worships. He worships. What does this mean? It doesn't mean he's going, oh, time for worship time. Happy clappy. I got the joy time. A happy word. No, it doesn't mean that at all. You worship anytime you think of God, anytime you talk to God, in any circumstance, whether it's a cubicle, in front of a drill press, in front of your kitchen sink. And he does this in his worst suffering. He connects with God and talks with him. I don't like this. I don't understand this. But God, I understand something is happening here that is beyond my understanding. And I'm going to try not to hold it against you. Go back to the original interaction with Satan and God. And God says, Told you, my man, he is rock solid. So he says, well, you know, you put the hedge of protection around him physically. You let me touch him physically and we'll see what happens. And God says, okay, I'll let you touch him physically, but you cannot actually take his life. So boils come to Job's world. He gets some sort of disease. He gets pus and puckering blisters all over him. They itch. They're in pain. He goes and he takes a pot. He breaks the pot. He pulls a shard off the pot and he starts scraping his skin. Scraping it all off. He's so uncomfortable. And when this happens, he has a group of friends that come to him to try to encounter him, to try to actually help him. And it says this, and they saw him from a distance, and they did not recognize him. And they raised their voices, wept, and they tore their robes and sprinkled dust on their heads toward heaven, and they sat with him on the ground 7 days, 7 nights. And no one spoke a word to him, for they saw that his suffering was great. When you are suffering, these are the kind of friends you want. You don't want trite answers. You don't want to hear cheesy Christian sayings like, let go and let God. You just want someone to come and sit with you and say, oh, be silent and sit where you are. At this point, these friends are brilliant. In a little bit, they're going to turn the corner and be jerk friends. They're not going to be helpful at all. But right now, they're just sitting with him. There's two ways to look at this stuff. One is a discussion of the problem of evil, to discuss how it is that the God actually created a world that was perfect. And God also, in the midst of that perfection, wanted there to be the ability to choose. He didn't want to just have robots. He wanted to have choose. So when God creates a perfect, loving, and good world and the ability to choose, it can only go south. You can't choose something and make it much more perfect. So you can have a discussion about these kind of dynamics, but the problem with the discussion on the quote-unquote problem of evil is when you're personally suffering, that isn't helpful at all. Macro understandings of how the cosmos are put together or the systematic themes in the Bible, it doesn't help you at all because the fact of the matter is you are hurting, you are bleeding, those don't help. When you are suffering, that's a whole different question. How do I think through what I'm experiencing right now? I feel a little bit odd talking about this because I know I am a neophyte related to many of you in suffering. I really do believe in terms of the suffering index, I haven't had as difficult a life as many have. I've had suffering. I've had difficulty. One of my worst periods of suffering was a couple years ago when, during our first awaited show, one of our volunteers fell to her death in this room. And that unleashed a whole process of grieving, of uncertainty, of anger, of emotional distraught, of all kinds of things. I would not want anybody to take a person's phone and scroll through their phone trying to find family names like mom, dad, grandmother, and call that number from the front of the stage trying to find somebody and tell them what had happened. The angst of driving to a hospital, and this angst nowhere nearing comparing at all to any family member. Nonetheless, it was some suffering. The angst of going to a hospital and thinking through, what am I worried about here? What am I thinking through? Am I thinking through how to help a woman, how to help a family? Am I thinking through Crossroads is going to end because we're going to be sued and we're going to go out of business? Am I thinking through my faith and how my faith is hurting right now? Why am I thinking through, am I personally at blame here? Yes, I am at blame. What does that mean? And sitting in a little room while there's a mass forming in the lobby and sitting with social counselors and hospital staff trying to get counsel from them, what do I do? How do I behave? And then talking with a mother on the phone who says, Brian, I need you to get up in that room. I do not want my daughter to die around lifeless machines. I want you to be us for us. Going up in that room and praying like I'd never prayed before and have not prayed since with a friend of mine, Steve Emanuel, kneeling on the ground with her there and reading scriptures, praying loudly, singing loudly, saying to God, God, for your name's sake, your word says for your name, for your name's sake, for your reputation. We pray for healing. We do some pray for that now. No one can ever be expected to figure out exactly what is the right way to behave when you meet parents for the first time when their daughter is there on a bed, on a gurney, on a stretcher. Remember going and dropping off the parents then at a hotel, local hotel, after she had died, and coming out of the hotel about, I don't know, 2 or 3 in the morning, and there's some taxi driver that was sitting there having a cigarette, and I said, a Marlboro Red, that will be perfect. Can I have one, please? And then having to come out of there and figure out exactly what would happen with a prayer service. And at my prayer service, or the prayer service that I was at on the first a couple days after this, I was not like Job. I actually cursed God. I sat here and stood here and said, God, your word calls you a counselor or calls you a physician. We haven't seen you heal anything. We haven't seen any evidence at all of your ability to heal. Maybe you can redeem yourself and do some counseling. I pray you counseling, maybe, but I'm not even sure of that. I said something that publicly, I kind of challenged, and my anger, I was that way. And in some ways, there's nothing wrong with that. It shows that there is a relationship. In fact, there's a whole book of the Bible called Lamentations, where people are lamenting. So there's some form of healthiness there. God is secure. But on the other hand, I just realized, man, I cannot leave it that way. I got to a different place several days later, and I publicly repented for how I had called God out in the midst of that stuff. When you are suffering, strange things happen to you. Strange thoughts go through your mind. It's normal. Everyone goes through it. All of us in here, you have suffered, and all of us in here, you will probably suffer more than you ever have. It's part of being human. Jesus himself, God himself, suffered. At the Last Supper, look at an interaction he has with one of his friends, Peter. It says this, Matthew 16. From that time, Jesus began to show his disciples that he must go to Jerusalem and suffer many things from the elders and chief priests and scribes and be killed, and on the third day be raised. And Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. Gosh, I love Peter. He's so aggressive. He rebukes God. He rebukes him, saying, far be it from you, Lord. This shall never happen to you. But he turned and said to Peter, get behind me, Satan. You're a hindrance to me. You're not setting your mind on the things of God, but on the things of man. Jesus loved to give nicknames. One of the nicknames he gave to a guy named Simon was Peter. Peter means rock. He said, man, this is a rock solid foundational principle. I'm actually going to rename you Rock, rename you Peter. And now Peter is trying to go the path of least resistance, trying to go the path of avoiding all difficulty. And Jesus gives him a new nickname. Oh, what's your new nickname? Your nickname will be, who could it be? Could it be Satan? Hey, props to the sound booth on that one. That was perfect. Perfect. He calls him Satan. He said, if you think that you can escape this life without any difficulty, if you think life is about the path of least resistance, you don't know anything about the purposes of God. I will suffer, all of us will suffer, and there's bigger things at play that we need to learn. Five things to think about related to suffering. Number one, suffering forces us to point to at God. Suffering forces us to point to at God. Yes, I just made up a word, strategic word. All of us, when we suffer, we will either point to God. God, I need you. Help me. God, I don't understand this. Point to God or at God. Yeah, you're really loving. Yeah, you're really good. How could you do this? What about other people who are worse than me, that have better lives than me? It causes us to point to at God. It does. When we had that tragedy, I had people saying, oh, I'm so sorry to hear what people are saying about you. I'm so sorry. I said, yeah, I haven't read a single newspaper. Haven't listened to a single newscast. Haven't read a blog. Why is that? Well, partly because I was very busy, and also partly because I know how people respond when there is suffering. There is always finger pointing. There's trying to find blame somewhere. One other piece of suffering I had is when we had a house fire and we lost our house that we were renting in Pittsburgh. We lost everything we owned, lost our dog, had no fire renter's insurance. And I had some friends that sat with me and just grieved. And then I had some others that pointed fingers. Said, you know, it was your sin. You must have some hidden sin in your life that's causing this to happen. This is not right. People loving on you and giving you compassion. You made your bed. Now you have to lie in it. You didn't buy the renter's insurance, so we shouldn't be helping you out. It's very, very painful. Why is this? And actually, Job's friends do this. After they sit with him, they start pointing fingers at it. Why is it? It's because we are all uncomfortable with suffering, and we have to find a reason. We have to find a reason, because if we can find a reason, we can say, I can avoid suffering because you did that, so therefore I'm safe over here. Got an email this last week from a woman who said, I'm looking forward to hearing about the suffering thing. I got a family member who died of lung cancer. I'm really dying, and they never even smoked. And I read that, and I said, that's so normal. When we talk about cancer, we have to spell out, they didn't smoke, or this or that. Why? Because we know we will be judged by somebody if we got cancer, by smoking, or something else. Because we always want to find a way that somebody brought it on themselves so I can feel better about myself. We always do. We want to feel like we are in control. When really what God is oftentimes doing in the midst of this is pointing to himself, pointing to bigger realities. C.S. Lewis has a classic quote, former agnostic, and then a great defender of who God is. He says this, God whispers to us in our pleasures, speaks to us in our conscience, but shouts to us in our pains. It is his megaphone to rouse a deaf world. We numb out. We numb out on life, and when pain and suffering comes, all of a sudden we realize there's something happening here right now. God gets our attention. Here's the interesting thing I have. Why is it that atheists get so angry about the concept of a loving God and suffering? I mean, I don't know if you found this, but I find that atheists are always angry and agnostics are always nice. I don't know why that is. It's just kind of what I found. But here's the interesting thing. Why, if you don't believe in God, do you bring God into the equation at all? Why, if you don't believe in God, must you use this as a pointer? Because here's the deal. If there is no God, if there's no loving God, then there should be no problem with suffering. If all of us are here as a result of atheistic evolution, meaning God had nothing to do with whatever the creation or evolutionary process was, if there is no God, then when there's suffering, it's always a good thing. Because the propagation of the species, natural selection, is weeding out the weak. You are suffering, you are having difficulty because the gene pool is being cleansed. You're not as good physically, emotionally, whatever, so you need to die away. It should be a good thing. But of course, that's awful to say. Why is that awful to say? Because we cannot extract from ourselves the belief of a creator who's put us in our image. That will never work for us. That will never do. Everybody struggles with that. It's because we always point to at God. Suffering and our response to it actually proves the existence of God. Maybe disproves our theory of what God is like, but it's impossible not to bring God into the equation when we suffer. The second thing that suffering does to us is it reminds us of our smallness. Reminds us of our smallness. We live in an age when we have become so big and so high in ourselves because we have abilities that nobody has ever had before. We have insurance policies. We have strategic planning. We have immunizations. We have collaborations for big world-changing initiatives. We live in a day and an age where amazing things are able to be done by. Even the fact that I can do research without calling a librarian. 15 years ago, if I needed to do any research, I would call up a librarian and hope that I got some smart woman with a bun who could help me out with a thing. Or I'd call down to UC and I'd just look through a directory and say, I need the science department. I hope some professor answered and I could answer some questions. Now, because of the powers that we have, we can find anything we want just like this. We are getting bigger and bigger and bigger. We're becoming more and more like God because of our abilities. And then suffering comes and knocks us down and we realize we're not as strong as we think we are. We're not as big as we think we are. And actually, for us in America in the 21st century, we are a bit detached from history. We're detached from history. Many of you have had far, 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 far more painful lives than us and has never rocked their belief in their spirituality, their God. Has not. In fact, even in our world today, you have radical Islamic extremism, violent extremism, is done by people who are hungry, who are suffering, and yet it drives them to their God to do unhealthy things. Yet for us, whenever we have difficulty, it tends to drive us away from. Why? Because we're soft. We've become soft people. Any moment, any year, there will be a plague and it will wipe out 20 to 30% of our population. Some of you are going, why did I come to church today? This is awful. This is stupid. When is this over? I come here to feel better and I feel like crap. No, honestly, we delude ourselves with our immunizations. Talk with anybody at the Center of Disease Control, any scientist. I'll tell you, there's nothing keeping the influenza bug or something like influenza or the black plague to sweep through our country. If it happens, we may get on top of it faster than ever. We may be able to cut off the pass, but we are way, way overdue for a catastrophic illness to wipe out 20, 30, 40% of our population. Way, way overdue. And when that happens, yes, I will have doubts. Yes, I'll pray for it to end. And I pray that I will not be shocked. Because if I'm shocked, it's show me that I've become detached from history and I've just become too soft and I'm just not hardy enough. We are becoming an unhardy people to any difficulty. We blame God and push him. Hey, when I suffer, I remind myself, man, I am small. No matter how much I may think I'm impressive to other people or to God, I am small. Suffering puts me in my place and I still don't like it. In fact, God, I'm going to pray right now because I'm almost making suffering sound good. And I just want to publicly say I don't want any in my life at all. I pray you help me learn other ways. Amen. All right. Now, third thing, I totally feel, I was going, oh my goodness, this almost sounds good. No, it doesn't. It sucks. I don't like it. And I'm just hoping God, here's a weird thing. You know, if I say something like, hey, some of us will lose kids. Some of us are going to lose children. It's like, oh, knock on wood. Why is that? We're trying to control the situation. We're trying to control it. Like, oh, you said something. There's some hex. I have to get rid of this hex. Or I think to myself, I can't talk about this in such good ways because maybe God's going to bring unbelievable suffering on me. And now, then I'm going to have to be a model for how to go through suffering when my kids all die. It's crazy how I thought. It's crazy. I'm so afraid that something might go wrong. I can't even speak truthfully about it. Because we don't want to be reminded of our smallness. We dip into superstitious craziness to try to do anything we can to keep difficulty away from us. Third thing that suffering does, there's many, many things, I'm just giving us five today, is it develops us. Suffering develops us. Every great person that has ever been has gone through suffering. Every single one. There's a kind of growth that you get that you cannot get when you enjoy your bonus when you're sitting on the beach. There's a kind of bonus that going through the fire, there's a kind of growth that going through the fire will give you that you cannot get when you sit on your couch reading your Bible and praying. I like all those kinds of growth. I like all those kinds of experiences. But the crucible of suffering develops people like nothing else does. All of us will suffer. And when you do, you will either grow bitter or you'll grow better. Suffering causes us to grow. We grow bitter or we grow better. In the Old Testament, one of the greats of the Bible was King David. David had a lot of suffering in his life. A lot of it he brought on himself from his own bad choices. Here's what he says in the book of Psalm 19. It is good for me that I was afflicted, that I might learn your statutes. This obviously is after the suffering. No one in the midst of their suffering says, oh, it's good that I'm suffering. But afterwards, he steps back and looks at the macro view and says, man, I learned things about God. I learned things about his bedrock principles that I would not have learned if everything was going my way. In the book of Romans chapter 5, verse 3 to 4 in the New Testament, it says that more than that, we rejoice in our suffering, knowing that suffering produces endurance, and endurance produces character, and character produces hope. Rejoice in our sufferings. This guy here has reached a level of spiritual maturity that even while he's suffering, he's rejoicing in it. Maybe one of the reasons he rejoices in it is he sees how this works. When you suffer, you can't fix it. You can't medicate it. We try to, but all you can do is endure it. You just keep on. You keep standing tall, and that endurance produces a deep, abiding character. And when you have that kind of character, when future difficulties come, you have a positive attitude and a hopefulness that you could not have had you not just endured through something you didn't think you could get through. This is one of the upsides of our future abilities to connect with God and have a life of power when we suffer. Book of Philippians chapter 1, 29 says this, for it has been granted to you for the sake of Christ that you should not only believe in him, but also suffer for his sake, engaged in the same conflict that you saw I had, and now hear that I still have. I hate this verse. Hated it, cannot stand. To you it's been granted as if it's in a gift. It's a gift for you to believe, and it's a gift to suffer. It's been granted to suffer. One of the reasons why it is a gift is because there's a kind of suffering that we have, a difficulty that we have when we align ourselves with Jesus. If you try to have a path of least resistance, if you try to make everybody happy, just blend in society, go the way everybody else does, you will miss out on a lot of tension, a lot of difficulty. There is tension, difficulty, and even suffering with making sacrifices of doing what Jesus wants you to do. And when you feel that, you realize, I'm identifying with him in a way that I was not before when I was going the way of the crowd. It's part of why it is a gift to feel tensions when we are aligning ourselves with who God actually is. The other thing that suffering does for us is it enables us to feel. Enables us to feel. We live in a society where we rarely feel. We have numbed ourselves out. When you and I suffer, we feel things, our enzymes are going, stuff's happening in our stomach, stuff's happening on our nerve endings, like does not happen when Xbox is being played. It just does not. I've been realizing this more and more, and the turning point for me was a few years ago, I was on a mission trip. We were in another country, my family and some other folks, and we were coming back from this one place, and we were in the back of this Toyota little pickup truck, four-wheel drive pickup truck, and we were four-wheeling through the jungle. And I don't mean on a nice little path. I mean four-wheeling. Road falling off, huge volcanic rocks that we were going off of, and there was, I don't know, 10 to 15 of us in this little mini pickup truck, and I was sitting on the back gate with my rear end, and there was, of course, that's how you always sit on your rear end. But I was sitting on this back end, and there were these paint buckets that were turned upside down. People were sitting on paint buckets, sitting on the rails of the truck, and we were all holding on to one another. And I would oftentimes hit a bump, start to fall out, but the mass of bodies would hold me in like a big amoeba. When they would fall out, we would hold them in. We were kind of doing this whole thing. And then it starts to rain. It starts to rain, and I'm sitting there, and it's getting wet, and it's raining, and I'm crunching up, I'm going like this, and all of a sudden, it's as if needles, it's like as if hypodermic infected needles are hitting me, and all of a sudden I realize, it's water. It's water, it's not acid, it's water. And I sat there as the water went all the way through me, soaked me to the bone, I realized, I can't remember the last time I was wet. When's the last time you were wet outside of a shower? It probably was some sprinkling of raindrops as you were running to your car. When's the last time you actually felt cold for an extended period of time? We live in an age where I go from my HVAC house into my HVAC car, I get to my HVAC office, I go to my HVAC entertainment options. I never feel. But suffering breaks through all of our man-made comforts, which I love, and forces us to tap into something inside of us that we never would have had any other ways. We've created such a safe little cocoon that every once in a while, reality and human existence breaks through and makes us feel. Jim Kelly was featured in the Inquirer a few weeks ago. Jim Kelly, the Super Bowl quarterback of the Buffalo Bills, went 4 times in a row, lost every single time. And he was quoted as saying this: "People always ask, would you rather win 1 time or go 4 times and lose? It's a hard question, but to be honest with you, I'd rather go 4 times and lose." First, I thought, what a sicko. No wonder you lost. You're a freaking loser. No wonder you did. That's the first thing. But then I reflected more on it, and I thought, you know, I understand what he's saying here. You go once, amazing feelings, and it's done. But 4 times, woo, going to the Super Bowl, physical struggle, difficulty, soreness, crash. Woo, going to the Super Bowl, crash. He had 4 years of feeling, 4 years of the whole breadth of human emotion. I hate funerals, but every time I walk out of a funeral, I realize, my goodness, I'm feeling human right now in a way that I did not feel when everything is going right. I'm getting in touch with my frailty, with my smallness, with the fragility of life. I feel that. It enables us to feel. It breaks through, and we realize, man, there's things about being human that we have wired out of our life. And suffering points to a bigger picture. Points to a bigger picture. Wherever you are in your difficulty, whatever the suffering is, it should point to a bigger picture. When you're divorced, which is emotionally, according to scientists, the most stressful thing you can go through, it's actually more stressful than your spouse dying. You can point to a bigger picture where you realize, gosh, marriage is so sacred because it's modeling the voluntary union that God makes with me. And so this divorce I have from this person is pointing to the bigger picture that God does not like it when I'm divorced from him. We learn these things. I had a woman come up earlier today. She said, I have mental, emotional disease, personality disorder. She said, man, when someone has cancer, they got all kind of love and compassion. People who have emotional disorders, we don't get any compassion. Oh, gosh, good point. Never thought of that. What is the picture of how this life operates? What's the picture of the role that I'm playing in the scene that I find myself in? Job goes through 30 chapters, basically, of his friends pointing the finger saying, you've sinned, suffering doesn't happen unless you brought it on yourself, come on, get right with us, there's some hidden thing in your life, and Job is enduring, 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 enduring. And somewhere along the line, Job crosses over a line. He crosses a line from being in pain and questioning God to being in pain and feeling that somebody else should have had this pain, not him, to feeling like he is superior. And somewhere along the line, he stays in that spot for longer than he should. And he basically is asking God questions from an accusatory tone of voice, and then God answers. The first time God answers, which I think is very interesting. Oftentimes when we are suffering, answers don't come, and when they do come, it is a long, long, long time in the distance. Long time in the distance, God answers Job 38, verse 1. Then the Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind and said, who is this that darkens counsel by words without knowledge? Dress for action like a man. I'll question you and you make it known to me. Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. God says, boy, settle down. You have no clue what you're talking about here. I understand you're in pain, but my goodness, right now, you don't understand who you're talking to, and there is a grand, grand picture that you are oblivious to. So now I'm going to ask you some questions. Let's talk about the beginning of the world. Explain that to me. Can you explain that? Can you have any understanding of who determines its measurements? Surely you know. You know all things. Yeah, you feel bad, so obviously you're in the right. Or who stretched the line upon it? On what word's base is sunk? Or who laid its cornerstone when the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy? Or who shut in the sea with the doors when it burst out from the womb, when I made clouds its garment and thick darkness its swaddling band? This goes on to detail the beauty of physical creation, helping them see there's a bigger picture here that you cannot fathom at all. And Job says in chapter 40, Job answered the Lord and said, "Behold, I'm of small count. What shall I answer you? I lay my hand on my mouth. I've spoken once and I will not answer twice, but I will proceed no further." I'm of small count. Job just realized, okay, I forgot it. This reminds me of my smallness. This reminds me that I am pointing now at you in anger. This reminds me that there is a bigger thing. Sorry. God's not done. Lord answered Job out of the whirlwind, said, "Dress for action like a man. I'll question you. You want to wrestle? You think you're all high and mighty? I'll talk to you. Make a note of me. Will you even put me in the wrong? Will you condemn me that you may be in the right? Have you an arm like God? And can you thunder with a voice like this? Adorn yourself with majesty and dignity. Clothe yourself with glory and splendor. Pour out the overflowings of your anger and look on everyone who is proud." He says, do you understand how the great sea monsters operate? Do you understand how the bird operates? We get so upset and suffering because our strategic plan for how life was to go for the final 40 years of our life, or the final 80 years of our life, or unbeknownst to us, just 6 more months, it doesn't plan. Because that 40 years, 60 years, what is that in the span of the great picture of eternity that God has been working on? And suffering, I have to lean into, there is a loving God, and He loves more than just me, and He's playing for much higher stakes than I would ever strategically think to play for. This book actually brings great comfort to me. This book of this Bible brings great comfort to me. I find it helping me more than any other system I've ever seen. If I were a Buddhist and I were to feel frustration, if I were to feel suffering, my religion is Buddhism would just tell me that evil is an illusion. There is no evil. And any difficulty I feel right now is purely in my interpretation of my stimuli and my environment, that there is no evil. I have to deny that. It wouldn't help me. It wouldn't help me at all. If I were in another religion, I would have to realize that I am where I am right now in the caste system, because in this caste system, the justice is coming my way. Because of my bad choices in a previous lifetime, I am now living out, my pain is living out my bad choice before, so I shouldn't even wonder where God is. Where was I that I failed the last lifetime? Oh, that'd be comforting for me. That'd be real helpful. Or I would view God in every other spirituality or religion outside of the one that Jesus is a part of, is out there, way out there, and I must aspire to Him and somehow please Him and weigh out the scales. Whereas I follow a God who took on physical flesh and therefore felt real pain and suffering. I follow a God in Jesus who says, yeah, I know what it's like to go through an unjust trial. I've been through one. I felt the suffering of an unjust trial. I felt the suffering of somebody who I was attached to, a friend, abandoning me. I felt that. I felt the suffering of actually wondering whether or not God was even liking me any longer. Jesus, He was on a cross. He said, my God, why have you forsaken me? God Himself says, I understand what it's like to feel abandoned because I myself have felt abandoned. And that's a big picture concept I can't talk about right now. God says, yeah, I know the chemo was hard. I know what physical pain's like. I actually had nails driven through my wrists, through my feet. I actually had a cat of nine tails with shards of glass and bone brought down on my back 39 times, chunks of flesh, chunks of muscle. Yes, I understand physical pain. I've been there. And God says, yeah, I even understand the death of a child, which no one should ever go through. No one should ever bury their own kid. And God says, I understand that one because my son Jesus, he died. I get that pain. I get that frustration. There's not really a neat, tidy little bow to put on this. But what there is a reality that we're not alone. Someone's been where we've been before, and not just another human being, God himself, the loving creator, actually puts himself in our shoes and actually gives us the grace to endure. One of the ways I've learned about this is a person who's become a friend of mine. He's here at Crossroads. We did a Thanksgiving Eve service a number of years ago where we decided not to just talk about all the good things we're thankful for, but have people give descriptions of their suffering and how they're thankful for what God's done in the midst of their suffering. I'm going to show a clip of one guy whose story was pretty profound. And while we do, we're also going to take up an offering. While we do that, know that we're generous around here because a large portion of our budget goes to alleviate suffering, whether it's poverty here in our city, around the world, or the suffering that comes when good, wealthy Americans don't know Jesus, and we want to reach and develop all of us. So that's part of why we're generous. If you're newer here today, no worries. Just let the bag pass by, and let's learn from Sean.
A year ago today, my wife was admitted to the hospital due to some complications due to pregnancy. And that's where she stayed until she gave birth to our little girl, Lily. She was born 3 months premature at 2 pounds, 6 ounces, which anyone out there who knows anything about preemies, that's a pretty scary situation. It's a really long road to get them home. And I'm just so thankful for the medical care that we have access to here. It's second to none. And the care that we received was fantastic. One thing I'm really thankful for is that on the night that we were admitted, God really placed it on my heart that my place, my home, was with my wife. And as long as she was in the hospital, that's where I would be. And so that's where I ate, slept, worked, and lived for the better part of 2 months. Just so thankful for that time, because in that time, God used me to show Marty, my wife, the love that he has for her. And it just really fortified our relationship and brought us closer than we had ever been. And the other reason I'm really thankful for that time is because on February 10th, Marty died from her complications. And it's been a rough year, to say the least, but even after Marty's passing, it was immediate God's grace. Lily has pretty much sailed through, you know, her trip through the hospital wasn't without its bumps, but she is a healthy 10-month-old baby who you'd never know by looking at her that she was a preemie. And the relationship that we're building is just has really helped me understand God's love for me. I can't promise her that life is going to work out the way that she wants or the way that I want it to work out for her, but I can promise her that I will always love her. And that has helped me so much. Thank you. That has helped me so much in my relationship with God, and I've been surrounded by incredible community, both within Crossroads and out. I have wonderful family. Marty's family has been incredible. I think some of them are here today, and I can never thank them enough for loving me the way that they do. And my coworkers have prayed for me, and it's just been incredible these past 10 months, the healing that God is doing in my heart. And he hasn't allowed it to grow cold or angry. And that was one thing I remember when on the morning that Marty passed away, I was so worried that I'd get so angry at God and turn my back on him. And that hasn't happened. And so today I can tell him, you know, even though it's hard to say thank you to him, all I have to do is look at Lily, and it's incredible. So.
Then Job answered the Lord, as many of us may answer the Lord right now, and said, I know that you can do all things, and that no purpose of yours can be thwarted. Who is this that hides counsel without knowledge? Therefore, I've uttered what I did not understand, things too wonderful for me, which I did not know. Hear, and I will speak. I will question you, and you make it known to me. I had heard of you by the hearing of the ear, but now my eye sees you. Therefore, I despise myself. I repent in dust and ashes. God, many of us repent, and we say, where you lead, we follow, and we say this with all the joy we can muster.